Welcome, everyone, to the Video Game Fury Podcast. It is I, your host, Tim Robinson, here on Friday, February 15, 2019. I'm here, as always, to give you the latest in all the video game news, scoops, playthroughs, and the continuing adventures of me studying and learning the game dev craft. Busy, busy, busy week in the world of video game news here. It just feels like 2019 is just not letting up in terms of the news, whether it's announcements on releases or delays or, in this unfortunate case, layoffs. It's an unfortunate reality of the world we're in that most companies, as successful as they want to be, there are times where there are downturns, and sometimes they have to either consider looking at ways to raise profits or reduce cost. And reducing cost sometimes actually means reducing the manpower in the space. It's an unfortunate reality of the corporate world that we're in. Where things get fuzzy, though, is the latest announcement of layoffs coming from Activision. And this was something that a lot of people were speculating for a while going into this past week's earnings call for Activision, basically going over the last fiscal year and how well they did. It was just a very bizarre way that they went about phrasing this, particularly with Activision Blizzard CEO Bobby Kotick being the one making this call with the investors that they were talking to on the phone. And let's just come out and put it out there in the running here. This is an article from Jason Schreier from Kotaku, who just seems to knock these stories out of the park one way or another. And this is what basically was said here, is that publisher Activision Blizzard has begun its long-rumored layoff process, informing employees this afternoon that it will be cutting staff. On an earnings call this afternoon, the company said it would be eliminating 8% of its staff. In 2018, Activision Blizzard had roughly 9,600 employees, which would mean nearly 800 people are now out of work. And this afternoon, the publisher began notifying those who were being laid off across the various organizations across its belt, which includes Activision, Blizzard, and King. Here's where things get very fishy in the way this was phrased. And I quote again as well. On the earnings call, Activision Blizzard CEO Bobby Kotick told investors that the company had once again achieved record results in 2018, but that the company would be consolidating and restructuring because of missed expectations for 2018 and lowered expectations for 2019. The company said it would be cutting mainly non-game development departments, bolstering its development staff for franchises like Call of Duty and Diablo. And it just kind of goes into all those areas here about the layoffs appearing to affect only those non-game development positions. So we're talking stuff like publishing, we're talking like esports. There was even mentioned like customer service or QA, particularly like in their European branch. I think in Dublin, I think they have a big customer service branch over there for Activision Blizzard. So that was kind of the rumblings we were hearing, and you kind of got a sense for it over time. It's been very interesting these last few months, especially if you look at all the fallout of what happened with Blizzard, particularly at BlizzCon when they made the announcement of their mobile initiatives, ending that big keynote with an announcement of Diablo Immortal, not being the pure Diablo 4 announcement they were looking for, but actually talking about a mobile game. And then off-sites from the keynotes, Blizzard confirming that they were working on a mobile project for each of their major franchises. And then, of course, there was a rumor from there that Activision was bringing in a CFO, saying that they were in the business of cutting cost. They wanted Blizzard to stop, you know, taking too much time making games, focusing on reducing costs and bringing out games more regularly on a regular cadence, like maybe every one or two years, I should say. And then, of course, there was this talk about all the esports initiatives being dropped down too. You know, you kind of saw the lining happening there as well with Heroes of the Storm being announced that they wasn't going to get the regular cadence of updates or esports supports. I think that was announced a couple months ago, I believe. The very vocal, hardcore fans that love Heroes of the Storm so much, unfortunately, vocalized that quite a bit there. But the reality is that from the numbers we've been hearing amongst the Blizzard franchises that they have, Heroes of the Storm is considered one of the ones that has the lowest amount of people playing it. So the writing on the wall has just kind of been there in these last few months of Q4 of 2018 and going into 2019. And that's the one thing that does suck about that, is that the rumors were there. There are layoffs. There were reports that Schreier was mentioning leading into this this write-up, that there were people just kind of sitting there actually, like, writing up their resumes, like, sprucing them up, polishing them, making sure everything on LinkedIn looked good. People kind of just getting jittery and nervous and hugging people as if they already anticipated that they were going to be some of the people as part of this layoff. It really sucks. It's especially when you don't know for sure if you're going to be part of that. You're just kind of sitting there wondering, is it all worth it? And I think that's just the standard. There's no way to get around and saying a layoff is good in any way. No one wants to see, no matter how much you think of a person or what the case may be, no one hates to see someone lose a job and have to wonder about their future and how they're going to have to take care of themselves or their families or their mortgages or rents or whatever debt or bills they got to pay. It just sucks all around. There's no way to get around saying a layoff is good. You know, unless you're in the management of a company like Activision Blizzard that's thinking about this bottom line. And I know there are some people saying, like, it was unfair for Activision to hold us over their heads, just basically trying to say, just get it out there, let them know that they're laid off and not have this hanging over their heads for the last few months. That part, I kind of get that the reason why Activision had to hold there. I mean, if you guys understand how the business world works here, I mean, Activision Blizzard is a publicly traded company, and they have to answer to investors, they have to answer to shareholders whenever they're reporting their earnings and letting them know how they're investing their money for the future there. And, you know, a lot of that information, especially if you work at a publicly traded company like Activision Blizzard, you can't really disclose that information until those actual calls happen. It's actually what we call insider trading. Working at a publicly traded company myself there, we're always told that each time there's an earnings call that's going to happen each quarter, we're always reminded that any information that you may have, you cannot share or use to do anything like do stock purchases or try to buy out or use that as an advantage. It is called insider trading, and it's illegal. So as much as it would have been great to get these guys out there and let them know that they were out of the job so they can go focus on, you know, finding out where they're going to go next, I mean, they were unfortunately had to wait until they actually had this call happen. It's just, you know, I'm don't get me wrong, I think it sucks in general. Like I said, there's no way to get around saying a layoff is good in any way, but this is just something they had to do, knowing how publicly traded companies have to work in terms of making sure that information only comes out when it comes time to tell investors and shareholders. Where things get really tricky for me is the phrasing. As you just heard me said, Bobby Kotick started that call saying that they once again, I quote, once again achieved record results in 2018. You would think in the wording of that you would think that everybody is doing great at Blizzard, at Activision Blizzard. But then they go on and said that they missed expectations for the year. Now, what that expectations really was, I didn't really go too deep in the article here as to what they potentially could be looking for. But it's shocking to say that you know, hey, we're doing a fantastic, all this money is here for us, all everything we can do to reinvest back in the company, reinvest back in our employees, only to go off and lay off 800 people. It's mind-boggling. And in the corporate world, I guess maybe Kotick and his management team there was potentially making sure that they're not trying to upset investors or shareholders by saying that they lay off these people and see the stock crash. I know that Activision has had a lot of problems with the stock crashing, especially when, you know, that announcement of Diablo Immortal happened being a good example. But it's just a weird, weird, weird way to express something like that. Yeah, I did fantastic getting all this money here. We're doing fantastic, but we're still going to lay off 800 people. And you need to even add to that there. I mean, think about all the news about how much money these C-level executives are making there. I think, I don't have the exact number on me here, but Jason Schreier had another article saying that, like, last year alone, Bobby Kotick had made, like, $28 million as CEO. Now, I'm not going to say I understand, you know, what the median salary should be for someone who's running the actual company, especially the size that Activision is, between you know, Activision itself and Blizzard, and then you also got to remember King is involved as well. If you don't know who King is, King is the developer and studio that does the Candy Crush games. I don't know what else they're doing, but Candy Crush is their bread and butter of the money they take in. So there's a lot of overhead. I'm sure he's got to consider there, but $28 million, I mean, for a company like that, and, you know, this stock is not that great. Even when they were doing really well, it's not like it was massively high. Really questionable why that kind of money is in there. There was even that report where they brought in a new CFO after the last one got terminated because apparently he breached his contract when he went to go seek for a job at Netflix as their CFO. He got like a $15 million signing bonus just for coming into the company. And again, I mean, CFO is a pretty major position. You're managing the books. You're setting up expectations and projections of how the company is going to do from a financial perspective. So I understand there's, you know, it's a pretty high position. You need to be fairly compensated. But to have $15 million as a signing bonus is really very, just very wild. And in retrospect, I was watching a video from a YouTuber. They were pointing out how Nintendo, I remember, had a similar case where things were not working to their expectation. Actually, it was actually much worse than probably what Activision was reporting, since they're saying they did really great last year. Nintendo, if you remember, had a very bad period in the early 2010s with the Wii U. Coming off the big success of the Wii, the Wii U just was pretty much a universal disaster for a lot of folks, to the point that they just kind of abandoned all development for games for its at the latter end of its life cycle to focus on the Switch. And the rest is history, of course, with that. But This is when Iwata, who was the president at the time here, and unfortunately he passed away a couple of years ago, he and his executives actually took pay cuts because they wanted to make sure they didn't want to lay anybody off because they thought it would affect employee morale. They made sure that, you know, hey, we were the guys on top that made the decision. We said that the Wii U was the way to go, and it wasn't. So we're the ones that are going to take the hit and take those pay cuts so that we don't have to fire anybody. And I think that's admirable. And yeah, I mean, there's arguments to be made that, you know, I think Western culture and Japanese culture are much more different. Japanese culture is very internally focused on keeping morale up and you know, sticking with the same team they've had for a long time. I think I hear like Nintendo's got some of the people there are still there that have been around since the NES era is. This is what I last remember. They're not that many left, but that's how much they value these employees and taking care of their franchises. The point I'm making here is that there's a big difference here about how management has been handling the situation, and I feel like that kind of money you're giving out to these C-level executives, especially on the very top is Bobby Kotick. I would think if you really are that invested in your company and you want to see the teams you have succeed, then this is the way to do it. Take that money, reinvest it somewhere, keeping certain departments going if you feel that they do bring that value, even if it may not be in areas they could not be in anymore. Like the example, you know, the other thing we didn't mention too was that last month, if you guys remember, Bungie had parted ways from Activision and took the Destiny IP with them. So what I heard was that Activision actually had their own PR and marketing department just for the Destiny franchise. So naturally, you don't have Destiny anymore. What are you going to do with them? And obviously, I don't have any inside information on how this works, how they've been working here, but it sounds like they just didn't really have anything for them or didn't really think far enough about what to do with these folks who all of a sudden had nothing to do. So they seemed like they were unfortunate victims of these layoffs as well. It's a very divisive issue, I think, again, but I think the big point about this is just that quote, just saying we did record sales, we just blew everything out of the water, but we still weren't successful in our eyes. Now, is that an understanding, does that mean you just botched your projections? Like, why would you go and say you had record results last year only to say you still failed? I mean, how much money were you actually thinking of making? And look, I'll be honest here. I mean, looking at what they had last year, I mean, other than Call of Duty Black Ops 4 and, you know, continuing iterations on the Blizzard franchises, like having expansions for like World of Warcraft come out and continuing to support games like Overwatch and Hearthstone and Candy Crush. I mean, there wasn't really anything major that Activision really brought out. And from all indications of the year and beyond here, that seems like it's going to continue to be the case. I mean, all we still only know that there's going to be a new Call of Duty, as there naturally is every time around the holidays. Blizzard came out and said they have no major game announcements coming out for 2019, which is going to be very interesting for BlizzCon later this year. They might have iterations on their popular games, again, like Overwatch and Hearthstone, but Blizzard is not doing anything different than what was told of them for as far as like getting more games out at a more regular cadence. Now, obviously, these mobile projects probably all started for them recently here, so it may take another year or so before that can come out. But it's interesting what they're planning, what they're doing here, and you know, interesting, not in the good way, I would say. You know, it always brings up the question, especially in our capitalism world that we're in, especially in America, how much money is enough? Like, you want to grow. You obviously want to keep the business going and make sure the lights are on so that people can make these games and, you know, provide for themselves and their families. But I just kind of wonder at the top of, for these guys at the C-level, and in the case of, like, Activision, how much more is enough? Is there's always this talk about this bubble that's going to burst in the games. And I don't think like the video game industry is going to crash hard like it did back in the 80s. But, you know, we're in a world now where there's a lot more emphasis on games as a service. There's a lot more emphasis on microtransactions and loot boxes and supporting the major franchises and doubling down on those. And those have their audiences. I mean, I recognize in the world that now has Fortnite and Overwatch and now even Apex Legends as a recent release is going to just continue to have that support in the long run because they want to make as much bang on their buck on those games as possible. But you still beg the question, how much is enough? And I feel like Activision and their C-level branch, as much as they have earned a lot of this, you know, Call of Duty being the major franchise for them for the longest time and amongst other big hits they have, I think they kind of need to reconsider what is the best projections to go with. Like, how can they convince investors that, hey, we're doing good with the money we have. We're not pushing ourselves $10 billion higher or whatever the number is, but we are at least maintaining business. We're hitting goals. We're at least breaking even. I mean, I question some of these investors. Like, how much are they expecting them to grow, per se? And at the same time, I wonder how much they actually really care about video games at this point. They just see this shiny object that they is being dangled in front of them, and they just want to get as much as they can out of it before they bail out. Again, speculation, but it goes back to that growth curve and this capitalist society that we're in, where you know it's all about keep hurdling up the next goal and the next goal and the next goal until you get to a point like how much more growth can the industry get? I don't know that answer. I'm just speculating as to what that could be. I would love to hear your thoughts about a lot of this too. You know, are they pushing themselves too hard here? Can they do better in reinvesting what they have and putting more into the company there? I mean, again, millions of dollars going to the C-level guys who, you know, I'm sure they do need some kind of big high salary being where they are at the top and for the kind of work they do. But does it really need to be in like the tens of millions? I just don't know. I feel like they could do a lot more of saving those employees than what they did. And it's obviously created a big of concern. You know, we're talking 800 people now. Who's to say what's going to happen in this new fiscal year right now? I mean, with Blizzard saying that they have no major releases to come out this year, how is that going to keep hitting Blizzard with people being told that they have to produce more games, that they have to reduce cost across their non-dev environments? It's a very scary time to be someone at Activision currently. I sympathize with obviously the people that are now out of work. I hope for everyone else that's still there that they're able to at least comfortably still do what they love to do, provided they still, you know, have that passion to continue to work there. I wish them all the best. I mean, it's very easy to make fun of the big publishers like Activision and even EA and all those other guys here, but I still want to believe that there is some good potential. EA, we've given them crap here, but they've also had a great game from Respawn come out called Apex Legends that's lighting up the Battle Royale charts. I mean, I barely see Fortnite get played now on Twitch by some of the content producers there that I normally watch who used to play Fortnite so much. So EA's gotten a little bit of slack by allowing Respawn to do this their way. Activision needs to consider their future really hard right now and think about this from, you know, how much is enough and enough? Do they really care about the video game consumers enough to not insult their intelligence, but also provide them a quality experience that they can enjoy in the long run? We'll just have to see. This is a story that will be very interesting to see now that we're in a new fiscal year and what the plans then that are going to be coming out from Activision. It's going to be definitely one to watch over the year. But again, I hope for now, the sad fact about this, unfortunately, is 800 people are out of work right now. Who knows for sure if there's any more down the road. It's sad. I wish all the best for the folks out there that they are able to get back on their feet. It was great again to see people on Twitter, all these other companies going out there saying, hey guys, we heard about the layoffs. These are some of the career options we have on our websites. Go check them out. It's one thing I do love about the video game community is that they do kind of stick up for each other. And it is relatively a small space, and you think about it, as much money as these games are making here, so it's not as big an industry as people or think of when it comes to, you know, the people that are actually making them. So it's great to see such a tight-knit community willing to look out for each other when these situations come up. So there's your story for their folks here. It's going to be, again, a very interesting fiscal year and beyond. I'd love to hear your take on this and what you thought about the whole deal with the layoffs and where they're going. Let me know your thoughts. On to some brighter news, though. We did get a Nintendo Direct earlier in the week. I think around Tuesday, I believe, it came out. And this is exciting for us because it's 2019 now, and there's still, after the big balooza of releases in the later of the year, being the two Pokemon Let's Go games, and of course, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, breaking all sorts of sales records for Nintendo, along with the Switch hardware as well, we wanted to get an inkling, an understanding of what 2019 was going to look like for these guys. And a lot of that, obviously, uncertainty was coming from the recent announcements that Metroid Prime 4 was being restarted from scratch, and this time going back into the capable hands of Retro Studios, who of course handled the original trilogy. But obviously means that we're not going to be seeing a Metroid Prime game anytime soon, most definitely not 2019. But from there, people just had questions. I mean, we knew we were getting a Yoshi game. We know that there's a next-gen Pokemon RPG coming out potentially around the holidays this year. But other than that, people didn't really have a lot of confidence in what was going on. I mean, also, maybe Luigi's Mansion 3 probably would be a nice little bookend to that as well. But Luigi's Mansion, as far as I've known, I've only played the first game. Not really the big system seller that like a Mario or a Zelda game would do. So there's a lot of questions going into this Direct to say, hey, what do you guys got? And I got to be honest with you, I mean, this was not expected and in a very good way. I was very surprised at the content that they have for this year, whether you're a fan of just getting ports of your favorite indie games on Switch or just major releases in general. I think Nintendo is once again showing how much support they're giving this system, and they're willing to get all their internal teams and all their third party partners on board for it. And I think it's a great thing that they're doing. You know, they're not, as much as we complain that they're not getting the big third party support from the folks like EA or Activision or all these other guys that are out there, I mean, they're in a different ball game compared to Xbox and PlayStation. They're not in it for the big graphical experiences and high-res definition graphics that a lot of those big games are for. They're in a whole different ballgame, but I think it works for them, and it works in a much better case with the Switch, the way things have been going for them. Let's just kind of knock down, I'm not going to go through the whole material there. It was about a 40-minute presentation, but I think the ones that definitely stood out to me, they literally, off the bats, as soon as the Direct came on, showed and announced that we're getting a Super Mario Maker 2 for Switch in June. And that's exciting for me. I was one of the guys that unfortunately missed Mario Maker when it first came out on Wii U and 3DS. Obviously, you know, being a Wii U game, it was one of those games that you just missed because the Wii U was just not a great platform. But it got a lot of great praise for its capabilities of being able to make your own Mario levels. And, you know, I would go on YouTube and just see people post these things and try to play them. And it was insane, some of the levels that they were forcing Mario to go through. And this one looks like it's a great follow-up there. A lot of new tools, new features. It looks like there was a part in the game where you got to be Cat Mario, which was from the Super Mario 3D World game of Wii U, which another game that I missed because of the Wii U, but I heard was a great game as well, as most Mario games tend to be. Looked fantastic, and I love that we're getting a lot more options, as you would expect from a sequel, along with these tools to enhance the level experience, the enemies, and the capabilities. I would venture to say I probably would get this. This sounds like something that would be great to do in the summer for sure. Kind of during those down periods where there's not a lot of games that come out in summer because everyone's traveling or on vacation. But I'm down for this one here. This is a great opportunity for me to get into a game like this. Not even a game, really. Just level making that I wasn't able to do with the first one. So good stuff off the bat from Nintendo there. From there was a lot of indie announcements that showed up. You got things like Box Boy coming out. We got a port of all games, Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, which was my game of the year a couple of years ago, coming to Switch too, which was very surprising. I never would think that, it's not a high fidelity game, like a AAA game of the caliber like Call of Duty, but even on Switch, I didn't think it was possible. But then again, we are getting games like Mortal Kombat 11 on Switch too there, in probably a more low-res presentation. So who's to say that they can't work their magic on Hellblade for this? What other notables we got through the presentation? We've got, Final Fantasy just seems to be a series that ports on every machine possible. We've got Final Fantasy VII coming to that in March. Final Fantasy IX actually came out the day of the Direct. That's a game I actually missed out from the PS1 era that I'm thinking of getting. I think it's like $20 on the Nintendo Store, so that would be exciting. They have put a lot of emphasis on the Fire Emblem game. Fire Emblem Three Houses is going to be coming out in July, July 26th, more specifically. It was supposed to come out in the spring, but they decided to delay it a little bit further for giving it a little more polish. I've never been a big Fire Emblem guy. I know it has its hardcore fans, including the style of the game, the strategy, the introduction of permadeath in your game that kind of creates that kind of tension and making sure you're keeping characters alive. So I appreciate it from the outside, but it's never been a series that I've particularly gotten into. But it is coming out in July. What else we got? Tetris 99. I mean, my God, guys, we're getting a freaking Tetris Battle Royale game. Actually, we're not getting it. It is out right now. It was also another game that was announced for the Switch eShop that's free to download. You guys just got to see this game here. It's intense there. It's literally just the Tetris screen, but then on the left and the right of your side is 98 other players playing the same game on the same server as you. And if you know how, you guys know this if you play the original Tetris, if you're playing like two-player, depending on how many blocks you get, those blocks transfer over to your enemy's screen. And I don't know if it's going to randomly throw those blocks into other specific players or if it's just really randomized. But it looked pretty intense seeing 99 people playing Tetris at the same time. You can only imagine the kind of tension to get that done. I may give it a shot here. I'm hoping there's other folks out there, my friends, but even you guys, if you want, I'd be down to playing it online with you. But that was a big surprise to see. We're finally hitting the transition point of Battle Royale games from shooters to a puzzle strategy game. It was just really surprising. Tetris is just coming back in a big way for some reason. If you remember, Tetris Effect was a game that came out late last year, particularly in VR, that got a lot of a buzz on there as well, particularly for its kind of new age style graphics and music. So that's a nice surprise, a very welcome surprise as well. Another great one that really caught my eye is a new Platinum game, Astral Chain. Is coming out August 30th exclusively on the Switch. It pretty much has got that action game vibe that is very typical of a Platinum game. And it's interesting enough that the Hideki Kamiya is the one actually directing it. If you don't know him, he directed the Nier Automata game, which got a lot of buzz from a couple of years ago. Very interesting choice. And the art style is very reminiscent of what I would expect a Platinum game to be. Just very dynamic, kind of almost like Devil May Cry style play here. obviously, we've only just seen a trailer over here. We don't know exactly how it's going to play on a system like the Switch. But that's a big get. It just, the way they presented it's really gave some buzz that I think we're not going to want to discount this game anytime soon. So that's another game coming out in August here. And one thing I'm noticing, too, is there are a lot of games from Nintendo coming out in the summer, which I think is a very smart idea. Again, I don't know what's really coming up in that first half of this year other than that Yoshi game. I'm sure there's others I'm missing as well. Fire Emblem, again, was supposed to be that big spring game that would kind of help in the middle of the year. But a lot of content in the summer, which I think is smart for Nintendo. They did kind of the same thing last year with Octopath Traveler that came on Switch last July. You know, Microsoft and Sony don't really play ball in the summer. They just don't. They tend to focus more on that beginning of the year or the end of the year. So I think even though it's summer and a lot of people tend to think that there's not, you know, people are not going to play a lot of games in the summer just because of the nature of the season. But I think it's very smart, especially knowing that the Switch is a portable console that you can take with you on vacation or take you with you on a flight or the train to some destination when you're trying to get away. I think it's very smart what they did with this and these releases. And it's really going to help them, you know, to stand out, especially knowing how crowded the holidays tend to be. But the big selling point for us, I was super excited to see this, is we are finally getting a remake of Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. Oh my god, guys. This game came out 93, I think, so we're talking 26 years ago at this point. I mean, I was watching a reaction video of a bunch of these kids at the Nintendo World Store that's here in Rockefeller in New York, and you could tell there's a gap of their knowledge in some of this stuff here because they are younger than the 26 years it's been since that game came out. They were cheering like crazy for Mario Maker 2 when it kicked off, and while they were, you know, they're excited to see Link show up at the end here, I think they may have thought that this could be like a, you know, Breath of the Wild type of sequel or some variation of a game recently they know of. They seemed a little more quieter in this point here, which maybe that will be a bit of a challenge to sell to this audience, especially knowing that Nintendo is very family friendly. But I mean, that's why they have us. They have us old farts to show them why a game like that is so revered and has been dying to get a remake. Originally, we were hoping to see that on systems like DS or 3DS, but now that we're in this Switch world, and that pretty much the idea of a console and handheld has all been kind of put together through the Switch, a lot of their hope was that they would finally get it onto this system instead. And lo and behold, Nintendo's answered the call. And it was great to see. I mean, it started off with a very nice anime vibe to it there. If you guys remember the beginning of the Game Boy game, it was Link in the boat trying to steer through a storm. Lightning hits the boat and he gets stranded on this island where the big egg is up there that you have to go wake up, which is the whole premise of the game. It was one of the weirdest games you probably would have seen and played. Like, you wonder, why did Nintendo even think about making like this that didn't have the typical lore we appreciated, where you're saving Zelda or you're taking out Ganon and you're rescuing the Triforce of Power and saving Hyrule. It was definitely a different offbeat type of game that, in retrospect, when people finally got to play it then, really did appreciate what they tried to do. It was kind of like, it was the game that before Majora's Mask became such a cult hit, which also had really nothing to do with the main stories that a lot of those games are, that people really appreciated over time. And just level design and the goofiness and some of the crossovers it did. If you saw the video, you saw Link squashing Goombas on his way out of a cave. That was a thing in the original game. It was just very interesting for its time. And I mean, again, 26 years ago, I have no problem playing a remake of this. And it definitely looks like it's going for that kind of cute top-down 2D vibe there, kind of in a similar vein of Link to the Past or Link Between Two Worlds. And kind of a chibi, I mean, Link looks like a chibi type of character in this one here. It's pretty cute to look at here. And I think everyone I saw react to that is like giving their thumbs up and saying, yes, I am ready to play this. And it's coming out in 2019, as it showed in the end of the video. No set actual release date yet, but I would imagine, If we're showing this now, it's February here, I would imagine this is probably a fall release. So maybe in September, maybe November or December, again, Nintendo seems to like the November, December time frame where it can kind of get away from those big games like Call of Duty, like Destiny, and, you know, Assassin's Creed, and all those major franchises to come out from the big publishers. So it would not surprise me if that becomes the bookend of the year, much like they did with Smash last year. So I got to give it to these guys. I mean, again, these are not blowout hits that you expect here. I mean, we just got Smash. We had Mario and Zelda both in the same year on Switch's launch year. We're not getting a Metroid Prime 4 this year, obviously. So, and the beauty about this year is that these are games that we had no idea were going to come out. We may have had a thought that maybe this is what they could do, but we never expected to actually be these being the announcements. Nothing was leaked or anything about it that I'm aware of for these major titles I talked about. And that's not even counting the games we know beyond Metroid Prime 4 that are going to be coming out. Like I said, we got a Pokemon RPG that I'm presuming will be coming out this year. Luigi's Mansion 3, Bayonetta 3 is going to be out there too. And is it smart of them to do this now? Because I would bet those games I just mentioned, like the Bayonettas, like Luigi's Mansion, like Pokemon, I would imagine those are going to be the key games to focus on at E3 later this year in June. Because at that point, some of these games that will be coming out this summer will already have been in the zeitgeist so long, so they're going to want to focus on fall and the rest of the fiscal year at E3. So I would imagine those games are going to be more of the focus at that time, which is why they decided to give room to games like Mario Maker and games like Link's Awakening, the spotlight in this particular Direct. So thumbs up for me here. I think the Switch is going to have a very solid 2019. Definitely, not to say that 2018 was a bad year for Nintendo, but they can only have gone downhill from there after having such a stellar launch with games like Breath of the Wild and Super Mario Odyssey and Mario Kart Deluxe. You know, just the content that had come in that first half of 2018 just didn't really sell enough for them there, only until they finally got to the Pokemon and Smash games that they really pick it up. But they are doing everything right now. They've already surpassed Wii U's install base. Things are only going to push higher for them here, especially with the console transition coming up potentially in the next year or so for PlayStation and Microsoft. So Nintendo's playing all their cards right, and they just need to make sure they keep doing that, thinking about their franchises, but also giving the keys to other kingdoms like Platinum or Ubisoft or whoever they may be, so that they can keep pumping out the content and keeping Switch in the minds of the consumer. That is all I got for you today, folks, here. I did want to potentially talk about some other things in terms of games I'm playing and what I've learned in some game dev stuff, but I figure with all the big news we have had this week between the Activision layoffs and the Nintendo Direct, I think this is a good point to stop here and save that for a later episode. Maybe early next week here. I finished up some of the Spider-Man DLC. I'll talk about that for a little bit, and a couple other games I've been playing as well. I also got to go to a Unity Developer Day last Saturday. And I thought there were some cool things to share about the tools they have on there as well. And some nice little chats and panels that happened there as too. As you can see, I'm trying to get back into the speed of things at game dev since I didn't do really too well with that towards the end of last year. So stay tuned for another episode for that. I'll make sure that's in mind unless some other big gaming news scoop comes the way through Kotaku or something. I mean, it's amazing that we're only about a month and a half into the year and all this crazy news has been happening already. But that's video games for you. It's a very exciting time to be a gamer, if you ask me. But for now, folks, you can continue to follow me here on all the podcast services, Google, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, you name it. You know, go ahead and subscribe on those channels if you want to look for Video Game Fury. But best way, if you also want to be part of the conversation here on the podcast, is the Anchor app. I am on anchor.fm/VideoGameFury, or you can go download the Anchor app yourself, look for Video Game Fury. You can do a call-in feature. Just look for that little voice message button at the top of my profile, and you can leave any thoughts that you have today, whether it's on the Activision layoffs or on Nintendo Direct, anything that you think you want to challenge me on and want to have a conversation on. I'm more than open to a debate on that as well, and have you be part of the show. So go ahead and do that if you want. Go to click on the voice message button and the call-in button on the Anchor app for Video Game Fury if you want to be part of the show. Otherwise, you can find me on regular social media channels. I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/VideoGameFury79. You can reach out to me on my Twitter at TRobinson79. And You can also email me too, tim@videogamefury.com, if you have a little more of a longer written content you want to speak to as well. I'm always open to any questions there too. Lastly, I'm planning hopefully to do a stream on Twitch tomorrow for Extra Life Charity. I wanted to kind of get started 2019 with the Extra Life Charity for the local children's hospitals. So if you want to catch me on there, see some of the games I'm playing, and consider donations to the cause, you can go subscribe to my Twitch page, which is twitch.tv/videogamefury79. You can click on subscribe or click on the like button, and you'll be able to get notifications for me when I go live. I don't know exactly the time that I'm planning to go on, probably around like 1 or 2 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow, which is why I think it's just a better idea if you want to catch up on that. Go ahead, click that subscribe and notification button so that when, you know, the notification comes up on your phone, you'll be able to see when exactly I start playing. Thanks again for everything, folks. We will be back next week for another edition of the Video Game Fury Show. And until then, this has been Tim, and enjoy your games.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.